Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Shout through the heart and you're to blame, darling, you give love a bad name.
And John Bon Jovi is just too pretty a man, isn't he? You can't be a rock star in the 80s and make it to this age and have teeth that look that good. He needs a smack in the mouth. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever and whenever you may be listening. This is Chain Wrestling with Mags and Sy. I am Sy, and with me as always is the Mr. Pay-Per-View to my Mr. JL. If you don't know what that is, look it up, kids. It's a clever little reference there. The Hall of Fame to my Hall of Shame. Congratulations, Rob Van Dam, Hall of Famer today.
Yes.
A podcaster who says if you really want to see extreme hardcore, ignore ECW and just subscribe to his OnlyFans. Mr. Max, how are we doing, sir?
And I'm doing a special offer on my OnlyFans now. It's only $20 a month.
So $20 a month, man.
You get to see me in the buff talking wrestling.
How you doing, mate? How's your week been?
Yeah, not too bad. It gets tedious just explaining it, but it's been a similar week to every other week in lockdown. Yep. Minimal contact with the outside world, staring into electronic devices for entertainment and work purposes, and then recording the odd podcast now and then. I have been doing something slightly different today, though. I've been researching. In the buff. Yeah. I've been researching and ordering the wife an electric car for work. Okay. Yeah, so that's been fun, very interesting, working out like mileages and how much range each vehicle can do and costings and stuff like that. So that's brightened my day up a little bit. It's not brightened my wallet up a little bit, it's quite pricey, but the cost of the fuel that she uses to get her to and from her places of work it's massively offsets the price of the actual car. So I think we're actually going to be about even to what we fork out now. So brand new car for the sake of the price of petrol is you can't really grumble.
So I mean, with regards to that, then obviously you need to like charge the electric car, don't you?
Yeah.
So, are you going to have like a somewhere to plug it in at home or something, or how does that work?
Well, what they do, they hook it. You get a bike, like a pedal bike, and you're on a stand, and you have to just keep pedaling until you fill it up.
You winding me up?
Yeah, of course I'm winding you up. No, what happens is you get like a charging port. Like the side of your house or in your garage or wherever, and basically you plug it in. But where we are in Burnley, there's quite a few different places you can go and get charging, pretty much like a petrol station. The only problem is it takes a little bit longer than just filling up with like 20 quid worth of a 4-star. You've got to stay there for maybe up to an hour to charge your vehicle up, but The cost is just outstanding. It's essentially the charge is about a penny per mile. So the car will do on a full charge, it'll do about 200 miles on a good day. So to fully charge it up, it costs £2. Where to fill the missus's car now, It cost about 70.
Okay. So I don't know about all that, you know, miles to the gallon and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't get all that. I don't drive work, so.
With the job that she does, she travels to and from Bradford quite a lot. And Bradford is about 80 miles round trip-ish, I suppose, from, no, it's probably actually a bit further, probably about 120 miles round trip from where we live. So she does that maybe 4 times a week. So you using that fuel, she's using about 70, 80 quid worth of fuel a week. And if basically we can get that down to like 3 or 4 quid for the electric vehicle. So it absolutely makes sense that offsets the price of the actual vehicle over like the time that you're paying for it, I suppose. But yeah, yeah. It makes sense. And plus it's a brand new car and she thinks she's posh now. So.
No, I've never had that feeling of a brand new car or anything like that. I mean, like I said, I don't drive. My wife does the driving. So
for what we're paying for it, I'm living in it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a sort of topic people have poked fun at me about in the past, I guess, because as I've said quite a few times, I recently turned 40. I don't drive, and my dad, from when I was 5 up until about 18 months ago, was a fully qualified driving instructor. So,
yeah. Well, you could have had lessons essentially for now.
I did have a few, but 17 years of age, I was seeing a lass who was driving anyway. I was more interested in playing football, going out drinking and stuff. I didn't want to know, you know. So, and now I look back on it, and I think, man, you're such a dick. 3 driving lessons. My dad would have got me a car and everything. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's not really for everyone, to be fair. Not everybody has that passion for driving, and if you can get away with not doing it, then the less cars on the road, the better. I mean, it's absolutely hectic driving anywhere of any distance nowadays, because it's just vehicles everywhere. So, you know what I mean? If it's not for you, it's not for you.
It works out quite well. Like, you know, the wife doesn't drink, doesn't touch a drop after the vodka incident from a few years ago. She doesn't touch a drop, but I like a drink, and I don't drive, she drives. So I think it balances out quite well, mate. Just to clarify, I say the vodka incident, she wasn't like a raging alky or anything like that. That was just, she just decided the hangovers aren't worth it. And so next time we do a drunk stories, I'll make sure I get the wife's permission, and I'll tell the story about when she had a few too many a night to go and see some strippers with her friends, and it ended up terrible, and she hasn't drank since. It's quite funny. But that's for a drunk stories episode there, Mags.
Sounds good. I'll wait with bated breath.
And I'll probably lose my breath by way of her hands around my throat for putting that out there. My week's been the same as yours, I suppose, mate, apart from the whole looking for a car thing. I've sat around the house doing nothing, bored out of my mind. Same old scenario. I don't feel the need to get up in the morning because I've got nothing to do. I can look for a job from my bed or through the night or whatever, because I'm just using the internet. So because I've got no reason to get up early, I've got no reason to go to bed early. So my days now are literally just molding into just one long continuous 7-day stretch of boredom before I speak with you again. It's like I rolled out of bed after lunch today. I probably won't go to bed till God knows what time tonight because of that. And it's just like getting into a bit of a lethal circle, I suppose, a vicious circle there, but
it gets so annoying. I feel your pain. I really do.
Another little sad thing, I suppose, mate. You know, I've always had that specific glass that I used to put my drink in to podcast with, my Hulk Hogan glass.
Your racist glass, yeah.
My racist glass, yeah. Well, it was only half racist, to be fair, because the vinyl thing had started peeling off, so you only had sort of Hogan from the waist up to maybe his nipples. The top of Hogan had gone by this point, so I had like maybe a racist belly on my glass, I guess. But yeah, I broke it, mate. Broke my glass. So
how have you done that?
I was doing the washing up, and I dropped a bowl in the thing in the sink, and I heard a big smash. And my glass was just obliterated, so that was disappointing. But never mind. It is what it is. These things are sent to try us, I suppose. As long as it weren't my good glass, mate, it weren't my beer glass, so I'm okay with that.
Okay, that is good. Then.
That's the main thing. That's the main thing. Speaking of drunk stories momentarily just then, shall we get to Twitter, Mags? And should we get on with this quite early today? Because we've got a huge amount of feedback this week, which I want to thank absolutely everybody for. We said it maybe it was last week or the week before, Mags and I said that this show doesn't work without you. Voting, retweeting, suggestions, and so on for the chain, plus also your interactions on Twitter for our additional topics that we bring up. This show doesn't work without you. So again, it's a huge, huge thank you to everyone who has interacted and messaged in. And this week, Mags, we had loads, didn't we?
We absolutely did. And it was a really kind of a good topic to talk about as well. So yeah, we'll get some interesting takes, some maybe weird takes. So yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, the topic, for anyone who may have missed it, was I don't get it. Mm-hmm. So it's anything that people around you or a great deal of people find fantastic, or something that's really popular that you just can't understand why, or you can't grasp why that is. I mean, an example for me would be I'm a big hard rock fan, I'm a big heavy metal fan. Led Zeppelin, I don't get it. Never have done. Never been able to get. Just don't understand. You know, but barring Stairway, obviously, that's a banger. But even that, I prefer the Heart version. So, wow.
So basically, fuck Led Zeppelin.
Kind of, mate. Yeah, I suppose. So we got a few of people's I just don't get it. It can be TV shows, wrestlers, and so on. I'll just run through them in the order we received them, Mags. Yeah, and we'll have a little chat about what people are telling us.
Let's do it.
And we start with our good friend Dan Griffin at DanGriffin21 on Twitter. It's a take that I've seen quite a few people say, to be fair. He just doesn't get Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. Physically talented, but just finds them bland. And it baffles him how so many of their matches manage to feel so paint by numbers.
Interesting. I mean, the Kenny Omega thing, I don't think he could be any wronger. When Kenny is on his day, I think he's arguably the best wrestler in the world. The stuff he did with Okada was absolutely amazing. The stuff he did with Tanahashi in New Japan was absolutely top draw. The books, I can kind of see. I'm not a huge fan of that kind of orchestrated dancing style of wrestling where they do overly flippy moves just for the sake of it looking good rather than having impact. A mild take by Dan there. I can see his point on one of them. I definitely can't see it on the other.
I mean, I'm a big Kenny Omega fan. The Bucks, the first few times I saw them when they were wrestling in New Japan, I thought, wow, this is incredible. And I suppose it does go to Dan's point of matches being paint by numbers potentially, but the first few times I saw him, it was really like, I've not seen some of this before. This is, it blew my mind. I thought, this is amazing. But now the more I see them, the more I kind of think, okay, well, I know where they're going to go now. I know what's going to happen next. I still think they're very talented. I still enjoy what I see, but I do get the whole point of, it feels like you're just getting certain spots in rather than it always making sense as to why you're doing that spot, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, technically, they're among the more skilled wrestlers that are around. But for me, a lot of wrestling is losing the point of making sense instead of just being something to get that holy shit or that kind of this is awesome chant. And it doesn't look like a fart, it looks like it's choreographed a lot of the time.
And that's the big thing. TV wise, Dan says Peaky Blinders, so many people think it's great. He watched 4 episodes and was bored shitless.
I can't say I agree with him, but I can say I've never watched a single episode. It's just something that I didn't really get on board at the beginning. So by the time I was slightly interested, it was into like the 3rd or 4th series. So it's something that I just didn't bother about. So I may eventually give it a go. I may not. I can see his point on that one.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I really liked Peaky Blinders. It's one of those things where I watched it on my own because the wife wasn't really interested, or she was busy doing other things and so on. She has since tried to watch it, and I suppose a little bit further in than Dan. She managed, I think, pretty much the first season as opposed to just four episodes. And she was the same. She found it boring, which I thought was weird because I loved it. So everyone's different, I guess.
Different strokes for different folks, I suppose.
Different strokes, eh? Back to your OnlyFans, are we?
What are you talking about, Willis?
Bang Bang Podcast, Andy, at Bang Bang Podcast on Twitter, says he thinks his feelings are fairly well documented, and then sent us a picture of Bill Goldberg. So I obviously listen to Bang Bang every week. It's a fantastic show. I know their thoughts on Bill Goldberg. Goldberg in WCW, I like to try and separate the two. Goldberg in WCW to me is different to Goldberg in WWE and Goldberg now. Mm-hmm. Goldberg in WCW I thought was fantastic for that. What would it have been? 18-month, 2-year initial run. After that, I suppose in a similar way to the Bucks, it's like, okay, I've seen that now. Does that make sense, Mags?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. I think he rested on his laurels with his move to WWE. He never wants to put anybody over. He is literally playing to an audience of one, and that one being his son. I remember an interview he did about beating Kevin Owens for the title. He said he refused to lose because he wanted to look like a superhero to his kid, which, for me, that's not the point of wrestling. The point of wrestling is not just for you to look good. It's for the whole of the business to look good. And I find him incredibly selfish. I don't think he brings enough to wrestling to warrant being at the top of the card every single time and having these multiple title runs, which just don't make sense because he doesn't put anybody over. So yeah, I agree with that. I think Bill Goldberg is definitely someone who I wouldn't miss if they never wrestled again.
Yeah, and that's quite a sad thing for me to agree with, but I do agree because I like I said, I loved Goldberg in WCW.
That Goldberg was brilliant. It was a breath of fresh air.
And the sort of teasing of the comebacks, and then when the music hits and all that, I still got a kick out of that for every time it's happened. But now, I don't want to see Bill Goldberg again, and I think that's a bit sad to say for me. But it is what it is. They've made it that way. Andy also says this bloke too, and sent us a picture of Robin Williams. I cannot get on board with that, mate.
Oh yeah, and he made a massive deal of it on the recent episode of Bang Bang. I mean, I'm very conflicted about this Any Other Bollocks 3 episode, because in one breath, Steve and Andy are throwing heaps of praise on me and you, saying how much they enjoy our content. Steve even says he's listened to Badlands, which is outstanding. But then yeah, he said I don't like Robin Williams, and I felt like unsubscribing and unfollowing him on Twitter because I think that's a horrendous take.
I like the gif he sent, to be honest. That was quite cool. I've not listened to Bang Bang this week yet. Normally my routine on a Monday, well, at the moment, is like sort of roll out of bed lunchtime. but in the evening I record with you at 7, and then the kids go to bed. I listen back to this show, ready to edit it tomorrow. And then I listen to Bang Bang after that. And I listen to something else now called Monday Night Chores, which is another podcast I find that I'm really, really enjoying. I really find that funny. But that's sort of my Monday night sort of schedule. I sit there, have a few beers, listen to Bang Bang, Monday Night Chores, and us back. I've not listened yet to this week's Bang Bang. So
you've got some prayers to come then, which will be fun for you. It's one of the sparsier Bang Bangs. Steve does get pissed pretty quickly, and he certainly goes off on Rob. He goes mental about Rob being obsessed with Mander and Corey. So yeah, it's a great listen.
Brilliant stuff. I look forward to that. And anyone out there who hasn't listened to Bang Bang Podcast, as I said, you can find it on Twitter at Bang Bang Podcast, and there's links there to where all their shows are, which is all over the place. Spotify, iTunes, everywhere you can normally find your podcast. Give it a listen. It is absolutely brilliant. It really entertains me. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to listening to it tonight now, Mags. If you're saying they're saying nice things about me, everyone likes that, don't they?
Exactly. I mean, I was shocked when he said he's listened to Badlands. It actually blew me away because he makes a massive deal of saying he don't listen to any podcasts from the Twitter scum.
Fair enough. Good Cop, Bad Cop at Good Bad Wrestle.
Okay.
The excellent podcast there. New Day, doesn't get them. The Hobbit, don't get that. And Country Music, doesn't get that.
Okay, so with it being The Hobbit, I assume it's Matt who was in control of the account this time then, because he mentioned that this weekend on Radio Tech that he's never watched any of The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. So what was the first one? New Day? Yeah, that's New a Day, bad yeah. take. I think New Day have been a revelation over the last 5 or 6 years. I think if we didn't have the New Day, wrestling, especially WWE wrestling, would have lost way more viewers. I think they've kept a lot of eyes on the product, and they've been fun, and I think wrestling needs that. The Hobbit, when I see Matt in person, I will have to give him a slap. Because how dare you slate off Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit? Get a laugh. You need to watch those films, or at least read the books. Country music, I'll allow him that. Not my thing at all. I would rather put toothpicks under my toenails and boot a wall than listen to country music.
Okay. Country music for a start. Very much my whole musical taste is very much based on the more sort of heavier side of things, I guess, or more old school sort of classic rock and metal and so on. Mm-hmm. With the odd bit of cheesy 90s dance thrown in as well, just because it reminds me of going to shitty nightclubs in Gloucester. And back when I was like 17, 18 and having a great time back in those days, you know. You know, with the white jeans and soaking yourself in CK1 before you go out and all that sort of stuff. You know?
Those were the days.
Yeah. Was it bottles of Smirnoff Ice as well with the Rage, weren't they? Bacardi Breezers and all that? Not that I drank. That's what you bought the ladies, obviously.
Oh, I was a Smirnoff Mule guy.
Yeah.
There were only a few bars in my town where you could get it, and I knew exactly which bars they were. Not a big ginger ale fan at the best of times, but just something about Smirnoff Mule really I got into, yeah. So that was my drink of choice.
We used to drink Beck's quite a bit because in this one bar we used to go to, it was relatively cheap. So that was the main reason we do it, like bottles of Beck's. And there's a bar in Gloucester that's like one of these sort of nightclubby kind of, it's a pub, but it's open late and it's kind of nightclubby-ish, if you know what I mean. Next to it used to be a little dingy shithole, sawdust, spit on the floor kind of place that people would just bypass to go to the one next door with the music and so on. Me and my mates started nipping in there for a couple of games of pool because it was always dead. And they'd sell bottles of X fairly cheap. This one day we went in there, and we went in there very early because we wanted to watch the football before going out that night. And they were selling bottles of Beck's for like, I can't remember, but it was pence. It was like 40p or 50p a bottle or something like that.
You had stayed in there all night.
Well, this is the thing. Don't get me wrong, this is the late 90s, so things were cheaper anyway, but this is really, really cheap. So me and the lads were like, well, okay. So we bought a few, drank them. And then we went back up and got some more, and they said it's the same price. So my one buddy, Dave, he asked, okay, is this like an offer tonight or something? They're like, no, we've just got loads of stock here that we want to get shot off. That's why it's so cheap. So we did what you said, Max, and just stayed there all night. We watched the football, we played pool, we just all night long. The following day, all of us were so violently ill.
Off beer.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. And that's why they were flogging it so cheap. And we were all just, I mean, three of us stayed over the aforementioned Dave's house. And we were all, it was coming out of both ends of all of us, mate. It was horrific, you know. So since that day, I've not been a big fan of Beck's. So, but yeah, country music, it's something that I've kind of listened to a bit more in the last probably 2-3 months than I have done my whole life.
It's getting old.
Well, yeah, I suppose. there's a fella called Travis Denning, and there's a couple of tracks he's done that I really, really enjoy. I reckon they're great, but it's country, but it's kind of, I suppose, got a little rockier edge to it, potentially. Mm-hmm. And his songs are just about meeting girls and going out for a beer. And there's one that he sings about having to use a false ID when he's a kid. And I love all that sort of stuff because I can relate to that. It's not like the normal country stuff where they're sort of going, oh, my dog's dead and the wife's ran off with the postman and, you know, my van's broke down again and all that sort of stuff. Do you know what I mean? Oh, that's what they sing about, isn't it, in country songs?
Yeah.
You know, or the wife's dead and the dog's ran off with the postman, whatever, either way around. It's, you know, it is what it is, isn't it? So country music, I think I on the whole, agree with him. But that Travis Denning, couple of tracks, don't mind that. The Hobbit, I can't really comment on that because I've never seen it. So, and I had the book as a kid, and I remember reading it when I was quite young and thinking it was decent, but I can't remember anything about it. It isn't in the film, isn't it? The chap from The Office, is that right?
Yeah, he plays Bilbo.
Right, Bilbo. What a great name.
Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of them.
Brilliant.
With the movies... it fleshes the book out a hell of a lot because the book was only about 300 pages, but because the Lord of the Rings trilogy was so successful, New Line Cinema wanted another trilogy. So Peter Jackson basically had to add characters and add like plot devices to make one book stretch into three.
Okay. So it was a bit slow, is it?
It's not that it's slow, it's just that there's people in the film that are not in the book. Some things that that happen in the film are not mentioned in the book. They're more mentioned in like the J.R.R. Tolkien appendices where he adds like a little bit of extra context. So it's a bit like that. I wouldn't say it's plodding. It runs at a fairly decent pace, but if you know the original story, you'll certainly see where they've kind of veered off course a little bit.
I get you. Okay. And The New Day, again, I'm mostly with you on that, Mags. I think The New Day, I think they've been good for wrestling. They've entertained me. They've entertained my wife and kids. So that's, I suppose, different generations or different ages and so on. So they can't all be bad. I went for a spell of absolutely hating them. I'm being sick of seeing them for probably about a year, but I can't pinpoint when that was. I just remember every time they come on the telly just being like, oh, for God's sake, not again. But I'm over that now. So, yeah, New Day, I ain't sure about. So, we had another from Dan Griffin. Sorry, Dan, I missed that one out the first time around. Michael McIntyre, he says he finds it baffling that he makes a living off comedy, given he's never said anything Dan has found even remotely funny. And then calls him a fucking con man, which I thought was great.
Speaking now, I agree with him. When Michael McIntyre first made it big, I found some of his stuff slightly funny because it was new and it was fresh. But yeah, his version of comedy is certainly kind of I've gone off it. Mm. So yeah, I agree with him with that.
So I watched one of his shows. I don't know if it was when he made it big or a smaller stand-up one or whatever, and it made me laugh because it was talking about having kids and so on. It was a lot that I could relate to at that exact time in my life, I guess. And it was, you know, that was quite good. But there's just something about him you look at and you think, I'm put it this way, he's on my list, if that makes sense. Have I told you about the list?
No.
Oh, okay.
Like a kill list?
No, it's a list of people that if I ever... You know how sometimes you and your wife might have a list of people, famous people, that if you meet, and it was some weird scenario, it's okay to sleep with them, you get a pass on it, right?
Okay, yeah.
I'm not saying Michael McIntyre is on that list, but in any way, shape or form. Okay? But I've also got a list of if famous people, if I bump into them, the wife won't get narky with me for punching them in the face.
Okay.
And Michael McIntyre is on that list just because he looks so smug all the time.
It's the floppy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael McIntyre, John Bon Jovi, and Celine Dion make up most of that list, to be fair.
Celine Dion? I mean, that's a bit mean.
No, I just can't. I mean, we spoke about it the other week, didn't we, when we had a recording a few weeks back. I just can't be doing all that warbling bullshit.
I know, but does that warrant smacking her in the snot box?
No, not on its own. But when you do a cover of an AC/DC song with that warbling bullshit, yeah, she needs a punch in the chops, I'll tell you that.
Okay. I mean, that's, I suppose that's fair.
And John Bon Jovi is just too pretty a man, isn't he? You can't be a rock star in the 80s and make it to this age and have teeth that look that good. He needs a smack in the mouth.
Yeah.
You know?
Loosen a few of them.
Yeah, he's a smug git. Millwall Chris at Millwall Chris 1 on Twitter. The Rock and Roll Express says he knows they were over like Rover, but just didn't get them. Now, that's interesting to me because I think the Rock and Roll Express are fantastic. Well, were fantastic.
I mean, I can kind of see Chris's point. I didn't see a lot of them in their kind of in their heyday. And what I've seen of them is more from when they were like semi-retired or kind of like the old age gentlemen of the wrestling world. So yeah, I mean, I understand their kind of influence on wrestling today and on, especially on tag team wrestling, and I'll always kind of like have that praise from for that being someone who's tag team wrestling is their bread and butter. I absolutely love it, but from not seeing them in their heyday, yeah, I can kind of see Millwall Chris's point with that. So yeah, I agree with him.
Yeah, okay. Have you seen them now, you say? You've seen them more recently?
Yeah. Like stuff they've done for Ring of Honor and NWA and the bits they've done in AEW.
Yeah, yeah. Don't get me wrong, I love the fact that they're still doing effectively exactly the same gimmick with the hair and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's fantastic because, I mean, they obviously they're men of a certain age now, so fair play to them. They're much fitter than I've ever been in my whole life, even though they're, you know, substantially older than I. But I look at them and I think that's exactly what I'm going to look like when I get to, like, in my 60s. I'm going to have a mullet where I'm bald on top because I refuse to cut my hair.
Is it the Robert Gibson look?
Yeah, exactly. And then you got, what's the other fella's name? Ricky Morton, isn't it?
Yeah, Morton.
Yeah, every now and again, he does that thing where, I mean, my granddad used to do it, and this is where I get it from. Where I sort of make the connection, I suppose. My granddad, now he's passed away, bless him, but he used to do a thing where he sort of go all gummy in his mouth, like, thing, you know, where he's got his false teeth and they're moving around a bit and stuff, you know. And you see him doing it on promos. That tickles me, you know. Chris also says Game of Thrones. I've never seen a single episode of Game of Thrones. I would like to at some stage give it a watch. It's something me and the wife have both said we'll watch together at some point, just because of the hype around it. But I've never seen it, so I can't really comment, I guess.
Again, kind of like the Peaky Blinders stuff. I never got into it when the hype was kicking off for it. I started watching it around the time the last season got released. So me and the wife essentially binge watched it over the space of a few weeks, and yeah, I loved it. I thought it was a really well done show. Really good acting, some really exciting kind of action. The dragon stuff was done really well. Yeah, I think it's a brilliant show.
Okay, I'll have to go. I mean, that's the way that I'd like to watch box sets or TV series, yeah, as well. Because I ain't having to wait week out. I'm Unforgotten on ITV at the moment. I love that show, and I've been waiting for the new season to come out for Yonks, and it got to like episode 4. And I started watching them thinking, great, that's going to be the end, because it's an English series, so it was really short. I was so pissed when I got to the end of episode 4 and realised I had to wait a week for the next episode. Yeah. Oh, it drove me nuts.
Well, I've watched a programme on Netflix called Snowpiercer, about this train going through. The world's been frozen over and the only kind of surviving people are on this one train, and it's like about how that classes of people are like put down on from like people who are richer and more well-to-do. And the first series, absolutely loved it, but on Netflix it's usually you get all the series in one go, so yeah, you can binge to your heart's content. Well, this one, it's a week by week release, so I think there's about 12 episodes per season, and they're on about episode 9 now. So I've had to wait watching it, because I know if I watch up to episode 9, I'll be fuming that I have to wait till next week to watch episode 10. So I'm holding off on purpose until all the episodes are available, then I can watch them in whichever way I want to binge them.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's what happened again with this Unforgotten is the best example I can use, because it is literally happening now. The last episode is on in a couple of hours as we talk now.
So is that season four? Because I've watched the first three seasons.
Yeah, season four. Yeah, so after tonight, Max, you'll have season four on demand. And again, it's bloody brilliant.
Yeah, that was another show that I didn't get into, and then it turned up on Netflix. We watched the first three seasons of it. I think it's the woman called Nicola Foster or something like that, the actress. She's superb. And the Indian guy, Sandeep Baskerwal. Oh my God, what a brilliant actor he is.
He's a dude, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was it. I mean, I sort of watched the first four episodes, got annoyed I had to wait a week, watched episode five, and I'm sat there and I got to the last 5 minutes of the episode and I'm thinking,
they better wrap this up quick.
Yeah, I'm sort of, they're going to catch the killer, like, something's just going to happen. The killer must literally walk into their office and go, yeah, it was me. And then the credits go up. Because I'm thinking, there's not long left. And then it ended on a cliffhanger last week. And I was like, shit, I've got to wait another week. On-demand stuff has ruined television for us, mate, I think.
It has. The season they had David Tennant in it, I think, was superb. Was it David Tennant? Not David Tennant.
No, David Tennant was Doctor Who, wasn't he?
The Scottish guy. What was he in? Oh, I think he was in that Fawn Shop. Basically, the one who was in care, and he'd been molested or something like that. That season was really, really good. And the one where they found the bones in the central reservation, that was a good one.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically half the seasons. Do you know, there's not many of them, and I think they're all fantastic. So
ITV
needs to start sending us a bit of a bump, mate. ITV needs to send us some money because we're plugging their shit.
ITV bang out some quality drama in Broadchurch is superb.
I've not seen that.
Oh, well, there's another one you need to watch then.
That's got Doctor Who in it, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll check that out. Okay. Griffin K at Griffin K1 says I'm just assuming this means he doesn't get to the Rolling Stones. He will never see the Rolling Stones as competition to the Beatles. I like the Beatles, but I'm a big Stones fan, so I can't really get on board with that. I like both bands. If I'm to pick one, I probably would lean more towards the Stones, if I'm being honest.
I mean, I'd lean the other way. I'm like you. I like stuff from both of them. But I think I've been a northerner and kind of like enjoying more of the Beatles stuff. I'd lean towards them. But I think not liking the Stones at all is a spicy take.
Yeah, well, he just doesn't get it, Mags.
Fair play to him.
Yeah. At Ricky and Clive, Ricky and Clive Wrestling Show.
This will be terrible. Well, it depends. If it starts with R colon, it may be a good take. If it starts with C colon, yeah, it's going to be a terrible. It's going to either be a bullying Mags take, or it's going to be just a horrific take, because Clive doesn't have good takes, even though he listens every week, and I'm only pulling your leg, Clive.
Obviously, just doesn't get anything that's not the Ascension's theme music. So, I mean, again, Ascension's theme music was pretty cool, but yeah, there's other music out there, mate.
it's a decent theme tune. I don't think it's anywhere near the best.
It's no real American, is it?
Well, I mean, that's horrific. That's just got connotations of racism all over it. In terms of theme music, I like the Good Brothers' Omen in the Sky. That's a decent tune. Any of Edge's theme music was absolutely A1 for me. I like Alistair Black's theme music.
Yeah. I just like anything metal, I think. I'm quite simple like that. The Sopranos just doesn't get the Sopranos. My wife Sharon should agree with him there.
Yep, it's another program that I heard the hype for it, never watched it.
Absolutely brilliant, but quite slow in places is probably the best way of putting that. And lastly, he says he just doesn't get Tony Storm.
Yeah, I can see his point. I remember a stuff from Stardom and the stuff that she did on the Indies, and the WWE version of Tony Storm is not a patch on that version, so I can understand his point there. So really, is that actually a good take? So I take back the name calling, Clav. You're a good egg in my book.
Last few to sort of round it off then before we actually talk about some wrestling. Ben has messaged us on Twitter at @chain_wrestling to get hold of us. And it's at @BenDIJim. Wrestler he doesn't get, Kenny Omega. We've covered that. Yep. Okay. Film he doesn't get, The Suicide Squad. It's a great soundtrack, shitty film. I've not seen it, but one of my big things that I don't get are Marvel or DC and all that sort of thing. It's just not my cup of tea. The wife loves it, loves all of it, watches all the films, has loads of merch, t-shirts, little models of the people, and loves it. I just don't get it. And music, he just doesn't get Pink Floyd, specifically Dark Side of the Moon. Doesn't see why it's so highly rated. I'm not a massive Floyd fan myself, to be honest.
Yeah,
it doesn't offend me, but you know.
I mean, I can listen to it. I wouldn't miss it if it wasn't there. So I can slightly agree with that. The Marvel and DC stuff. Marvel for me is. I like certain films, but as a whole, it's just too involving for me. You just need to know too much, and you need to have watched everything to really get what's going on, which, yeah, that doesn't really vibe with me. DC, yeah, again, I think they've just been let down by poor films over the last few years or so. Suicide Squad, I enjoyed. As on its own, as like a piece of film, soundtrack was absolutely superb. I agree with that bit. But yeah, I mean, they're fairly decent takes, I suppose. Well done, Ben.
as
if he's looking for validation from me.
Yeah. At Von Tugbot has messaged in.
This will be brutal.
He says he just doesn't get Bang Bang Podcast. A bold dwarf and a sweary, opinionated drunk talk about stuff they clearly have no love for and are basically chancing fucking amateurs. The whole thing is offensive.
Yeah.
I like the show, so.
I do as well. What I don't like is the horrific beers that Steve drinks. He drinks some rat shat.
I don't know. See, I like a few ales. He reads some of them out and I'm like, I would never buy that myself. I would never go into a shop, pick it up and go, okay. But then I hear Steve describe it and I'm like, oh, you know what?
Yeah.
Now I do want one of those.
He's almost like an artisan with the way he describes beer. And, I don't think he's very impressed with unbooking the territory, stealing the gimmick of drinking beers and rating them on the show. But is there anything that Steve is impressed with? I don't know. I think the show is absolutely brilliant. Belly laughs after belly laughs after belly laughs. So he's got a bad take there, saying that he doesn't get Bang Bang Podcast. He should start listening to it every once in a while.
Yeah, maybe that's the issue. Brian J at @B_Sheck on Twitter. Again, I apologise to people. We're going to have to fire through some of these a little bit quickly now. This one's going to be quite easy to fire through, I think. Wrestler-wise, he just doesn't get Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio, Bobby Lashley. Not that they aren't talented, just doesn't like watching them. And again, down to different people's opinions, I guess.
Yeah.
They've all been around for so long, there's been spells where I've not enjoyed them, but there's also times where I have, so...
Yep. Again, different strokes to different folks.
Yeah. And then music, and he's put in brackets, he's going to piss some people off here. He has Pink Floyd, Tom Petty, the Rolling Stones. And then he goes on to list Metallica, Motley Crue, Aerosmith, and finally AC/DC. It's best if I just don't comment on that because I'll lose my temper. But again, each to their own, mate.
Like abusing the podcast that you're writing to comment on. Your takes are your takes, and yeah, whether you're wrong, you are the person who you have to live with, and you have to sleep at night. So I don't agree with you.
GH at Carrie the Gary, wrestler he doesn't get, Edge. Going back, he can enjoy his stuff, but never see him as an all-time great. He says he missed 2006, 2007-ish of WWE, though, which is, I suppose, a big period of what made Edge great. TV shows, all of them. He only watches wrestling and 90s comedy, so I suppose, yeah, doesn't get TV, fair enough.
I mean, that's a broad statement.
Yeah.
Like all of the TV ever.
All TV ever. Well, no, 90s comedy, says here, so that's all right. So, I don't know, what's that, bottom? You know?
It's a paddy.
Yeah. and music. Muse. And I can get on board with that. They're okay. You know, if it comes on the radio or the music channels or whatever, I think, yeah, it's all right, but I wouldn't rush out to buy an album, and they've headlined festivals I've been at, and I've gone back to the 10. I just don't get it. So,
okay. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a huge Muse fan. Tolly, my Badlands cohort, he absolutely adores Muse. I like some of the stuff, but I'm not someone who I would be heartbroken if they broke up or anything like that. TV, I mean, if you don't get TV, you don't get TV. I mean, who am I to judge? What, and the wrestling one, Edge, oof, that, I can't get down with that take. I've been an Edge head since I saw him coming through the crowds on his debut. I've thought Edge is always going to be something special. There was a point in his career when I thought he was just not going to be able to break through that glass ceiling. He's always going to be around the Intercontinental title level. But then when I had like my breakaway from wrestling, where I was just essentially just watching the pay-per-views, that's when he smashed through that glass ceiling and became a really good character wrestler.
He definitely smashed something, mate, to get his heel. I'll tell you that.
Oh, you're going to be as rude as you like with me.
I can't get on board with that take of Edge being, I don't get it, because I definitely did get it.
Yeah. Yeah, just breaking through that glass ceiling. I mean, if he'd have known all these years, all he had to do was slip it to his best mate's missus, then he'd probably got that push sooner, wouldn't he? But there we go.
For Vince, he would have definitely got it sooner.
At UTT Rob, allegations aside, he says he's never got the Matt Riddle hype. He's never seen Game of Thrones, but I suppose if you've never seen it, same as me, I guess. And Luke Gallows' sense of humour just doesn't get it.
Yeah, the Matt Riddle stuff, I know of Matt Riddle from his MMA days, so I kind of get the character a little bit more. He's because of what's happened in his personal life, I've kind of gone off him as a talent, but I still understand why he's as popular as he is. The Game of Thrones one, we've been through that. If it's something that you do need to try if you've got the time. What was the last one?
Luke Gallows' sense of humour.
Yeah, it's very, very Attitude Era wannabe. The stuff he does on Being the Elite, yeah, it just doesn't make sense. Talking about missing matches because they were having a wank. It's just very crass. Oh,
okay.
It's humour that belongs in the mid-90s. I mean, if you find that funny, good, all power to you. But yeah, I'd like to think my comedy tastes have grown a little bit from that.
Missing matches because he's having a wank.
Yeah, the Good Brothers did a whole spot where they were meant to come out and save the Young Bucks, but Luke didn't come out because they were in the toilet having a wank, and he wanks about 12 times a day.
That's a lot.
Yeah, they must have a very, very red penis.
Luke Gallows and the red knob. at Ray Joe Tuckers, wrestler who doesn't get Brock Lesnar. I suppose it's easy to go down that road, isn't it? But it is very divisive. Brock Lesnar, a lot of people think he's good for the business. A lot of people just don't get it because it just seems like a great deal. They're just suplex after suplex. I'm one who does enjoy Brock Lesnar. I think I enjoy having him on my screen. I think he's a very talented guy, and when he's motivated or when he's got something he can really sink his teeth into, I think he's brilliant. What about you, Max?
I think Brock is a generational talent. I understand people not liking him because of the way he conducts his business, but the one thing about him is he knows what he's worth, and he knows how to get the most money for doing the least amount of work, which is essentially what the wrestling business should be about. I think once he's gone, the kind of vitriol towards him will fade, and we'll realise that that this kind of person only comes around once in a generation, and will miss what he brings to the business, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Matt Phipps at Buffy 5252 says, just doesn't get the Bella Twins. No in-ring talent, just doesn't get it. I can see that. I can see why people think that. But obviously, they sort of came from an era that the trail end of how you looked was more important to how you worked, I guess, on the women's side. So you can understand that, I suppose.
I mean, we've covered their match on here, and it was a fine match. It was it did what it needed to do. They were never a team that I was particularly interested in. They're in that old kind of period where I was like tuned out of the weekly product. I certainly wouldn't have missed them not being there, but I do understand what they've done they've been able to make themselves a career from it, and they've been able to push into the mainstream, which a lot of wrestling talent have not been able to do. So I think they go underrated because of that, because of how they were able to use wrestling to push into the mainstream and kind of take wrestling along with the journey for them.
Yeah, fair enough. Again, something else I cannot comment on because I've never seen it, but that 90s wrestling pod says it just doesn't get Avatar. I've never seen it, so I can't comment.
It's not a film I've ever seen or ever wanted to see. I saw how long the first film was, and it just turned me off straight away. For a new film to be like 3 hours long, I just wasn't interested in it.
The Interstate Wrestling Podcast at IS WrestlePod says the wrestler they don't get is Brock again. So we've just covered that. Film Star Wars: The Last Jedi. As a Star Wars fan, on the side of no thanks with this one. Music, don't get you two on a close second. Red Hot Chili Peppers. I'm with them on the Chili Peppers. I'm not a massive fan of theirs. I don't grasp a lot of it.
I like some of their stuff, not all of it, but certainly the Californication era of stuff I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and Star Wars. I like the original first three films, but later ones, I'm take it or leave it for me. Really,
the first three outstanding. I really dropped off after the Attack of the Clones. I thought Phantom Menace was all right. I didn't like some of the stuff that was in it, like the explaining of the midichlorians, and I felt that that wasn't needed. But after we get to this new trilogy, it doesn't interest me, so I haven't watched any of it.
Jelly Pickle J at Jelly Pickle J on Twitter. Wrestler Booker T. I like Booker T.
I'm a huge Booker fan.
Music Crywank. I don't know what that is.
Is that when you've been heartbroken and you think you need to bash one out?
Or perhaps it's when you've done it 12 times a day and your knob's red like Luke Gallows.
You just cry.
And you just need some ointment or something.
Yeah, your penis is weeping.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I'm intrigued to know what the musical thing here, Crywank, is, but I don't want to Google Crywank because I know what's going to come up, So it's like, and TV shows or reality TV, I can get on board with that.
Yeah. There's been very few reality TV shows that I've actually enjoyed. Crywank, never heard of them. Don't particularly sound good to me. I agree with at least those takes.
Call Up Wrestling at Call Up Wrestling. He mentions the Good Brothers, Gallows and Anderson. Just doesn't get it. I always think, oh wow, there they are, and like it's a big deal. But then when they actually wrestle, it doesn't quite live up to it. if that makes sense.
The New Japan stuff they did when they were heavily in the Bullet Club stuff, I was into. Then they dropped off the planet for me when they came to WWE. They were just one of those kind of acts that Vince brought in, thinking that they were popular, and then he got bored because it's a new toy, and then just palmed them off. And then the stuff they've done in Impact and AEW, I don't get what it's I don't find it funny, basically. Mm.
Yeah, I get you. At Sparky7638, champion on Twitter, he's called Roman Reigns. Just doesn't get the Roman Reigns hype, he says. Just doesn't get it. I think the heel Reigns is fantastic. I was bloody sick of him before this happened. Mm-hmm. But in ring, I think the guy's very talented. As far as WWE goes, because they all wrestle a WWE style, he's very good at that style, I think.
Yep, I think he's one of the best WWE style wrestlers. I kind of like you. I don't think I disliked him as much, but I was certainly he was all right. He was just never one of my favorites. But this heel version of Roman, I would happily watch that every single week. I think I'd like to see him on a long term kind of a Carter style run with the title, where he's just ekes out the win all the time and nobody can beat him. I think this it's what we've been crying out for as a wrestling community, a Roman Reigns with a bit of edge, and it's absolutely working.
Yeah, definitely. Last two then. Pinto Beans at Pinto Beans 20. CM Punk, never got it. Don't like him on the mic. Don't care much for his in-ring work. Hated his title rings. I like Punk. I can't get on board with that personal opinion there. What are your thoughts, Mags?
I agree with him. Punk was... He was one of the stars of the period where I was just not watching, so I didn't get that initial emotional connection with him. I've gone back and watched a lot of his stuff. It's just... It's nothing for me is groundbreaking. He doesn't do it. He does the stuff very, very well. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't do anything that particularly stands out for me. On the mark, I mean, aside from that, the part bomb, nothing really appeals or stood out to me about him. And then on social media, he blocked me for absolutely no reason. So I'm fully on board with Punk being a wanker. So, yeah.
Oh, mate, you're just salty because Punk blocked you. That's what it comes down to, isn't it? You know, I like CM Punk. That whole Summer of Punk thing was great. The stuff in the Nexus was great. The Straight Edge Society stuff I really enjoyed as well. So I'm afraid I'm going to have to disagree with you two fellas on that.
It's okay to be wrong.
Well, I'm glad you're comfy with where you stand. And lastly, Dave, my mate Ari, Dave Pyle, the band Ghost, can't stand it. Load of shite. He says he'd rather not off a horse, which is interesting. I only heard a couple of songs of Ghost. They're okay. Not my cup of tea, even though they are more, I suppose, in my wheelhouse, being a rock stroke metal band. But yeah, not something for me. And also the TV series Friends, just never got it. I like Friends.
Yeah, I enjoyed it at the time. It's not a program I'd go back and watch again on the regular. I think it's aged not very well. Ghost, I've heard of the band. I can't tell you a single track. Not really my cup of tea, I suppose.
No, I think they're, if I'm thinking of the right band, Dave, I apologise if I'm getting this wrong, but they're all masked up and stuff, and you never really know who different members of the band are. That kind of thing I find quite interesting.
Kind of like Slipknot, eh?
Yeah, but I mean, everyone knows who Slipknot are, don't they? Do you know what I mean? But similar in a way, they're all dressed up like that. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily monsters, they almost look like... Just to explain, I suppose. But there's rumours of the guitarist being this fella, or the singer being somebody else, whatever. I find that quite interesting. But yeah, the music wise, it's not massively for me, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there we go. I mean, thank you very, very much to everybody for getting in touch with the show. Again, if you don't do this, if you're not interacting, if you're not getting involved, then honestly, this show might as well not happen. So I hugely, hugely appreciate everyone getting in touch. It's great. Thank you very much for that, everybody.
Absolutely, the more the merrier. I mean, even though we don't agree with some of your takes and some of them we absolutely do agree with, we absolutely love the fact that you're all getting involved. We love the interaction from you guys. And as Simon has said multiple times, this show is infinitely better because you guys get involved and we're getting that feedback from you. So we much appreciate every single one of you.
Exactly.
No. Wherever you are.
Okay, should we talk some wrestling then, Max?
About bloody time, only about an hour into recording.
Yeah, an hour in, yep.
So, yeah, it's Hardcore Heaven 2000, Jerry Lynn versus Rob Van Dam. Go and watch it, and I'll see you next week, Simon.
Yeah, it's quite good. You can find me on Twitter at... it is good. It is very good. ECW Hardcore Heaven 2000. Mm-hmm. Rob Van Dam returning from a broken leg, having been out for a few months, facing off against Jerry Lynn, who I suppose is somebody he's worked with quite a bit for ECW, and every match they have it is a belter. I really, really enjoyed this, Max. I watched the majority of the pay-per-view while it was on in the background as I was sort of coming and going throughout the room. This match, obviously, I watched in its entirety for the show, but I enjoyed what I saw.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite ECW pay-per-views. As I've said before on this show, I got into ECW pretty late whilst the company was winding down. And this is one of the first two or three ECW DVDs that I went and picked up. Yeah, and I think it's... overall, it's probably one of ECW's better pay-per-view cards. And for me... Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn is one of the signature feuds, kind of like their Austin versus The Rock style feuds for the build of ECW. Really kind of exemplifies what was good about ECW, bringing like this amazing technical wrestling talent and mixing it with like the hardcore blood and gut style that the ECW faithful absolutely loved. And then using this to kind of draw in the casual fans and making the company more and more popular. I think that Rob Van Dam and Jerry Lynn are so, so good together. The chemistry is just outstanding.
Yeah, definitely. And it shows very much early on with like the opening exchange. I suppose it's kind of that indie wrestler exchange that a lot of matches do now at the beginning, isn't it? With like people missing leg sweeps and missing high kicks and ducking under clotheslines and back and forth, and they both have a standoff afterwards. The difference is here, these are two quite big guys doing this. Yeah, they're not two little indie guys.
I think Jerry Lynn's about 220, and Rob is certainly quite a bit bigger. But the technical skill and the agility they both have, just off the charts.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant stuff. There's something as well about somebody Van Damme's size doing the moves he does. Mm-hmm. Not just this exchange with Jolie in the beginning, but some of the rolling thunder, as they call it, and the sort of cartwheel into a moonsault. I mean, nowadays we see guys doing these sort of things, regardless of size, I guess. But 20 odd years ago, I mean, I remember the first time I saw a Rob Van Dam match, and it was actually against Jerry Lynn, but it was from Guilty as Charged the following year. So it was not this one, but you know, the same sort of format, I guess. Same guys in the ring, and it blew my mind seeing this guy jump on the guardrail and flip off it, and just stuff I'd never ever seen before.
He's got the agility of a cruiserweight.
Yeah.
And yet the power of a heavyweight. It's just the guy is as much a generational talent as Brock Lesnar is.
Yeah, well, that's a big shake. That's a big shake. But I can see where you're coming from, because it is different to everything else that was going on for a fella. What did we say? It was 234, 235, whatever it was, pounds.
Yeah, probably around that. Yeah.
I mean, put that into context, that's exactly the same as what Bret Hart used to weigh in his prime.
and you wouldn't see Bret Hart being able to leap from the mat to the top rope and turn in midair to balance perfectly on the corner and then do a five-star frog splash and able to turn in midair doing that. It was like his body was made of rubber.
Exactly. And the one as well, when they do, rather than just a drop down for someone to, you know, the old spot where the one wrestler leapfrogs, the other guy goes into the ropes, as he comes back, he drops down and he steps over him. Van Damme goes down into the splits.
Yeah.
And well, just little touches like that, just absolutely incredible.
He actually invented a weightlifting lift called the Van Damme lift, where he does the splits between two chairs and lifts the weights from off the floor in the middle. That's actually called the Van Damme lift.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, it's incredible to see, isn't it? Like, it's just so athletic. It's amazing. The crowd in ECW, I suppose, really does help make every ECW event. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things they're most famous for, isn't it? The fanatical support that brand had.
They were rabid.
Oh, this show and this match. Oh, my goodness. They were so into it, weren't they?
Yeah, and the crowd actually play into the actual build-up of the storyline, because whilst Rob Van Dam and Jerry Lynn you could throw together and you know you're going to have a good match, this one actually did have a little bit of story behind it. So basically, Rob Van Dam had been TV champion for the best part of 2 years, gone unbeaten in all his time in ECW, and then he broke his leg. Which meant he was out of action for a while. And at that time, Cyrus the Virus, who we now know as the Invisible Hand, Don Callis, he was representing the network, because ECW were having issues with TNN, who were actively courting WWE and trying to replace ECW. So he was there kind of the way that ECW could slag off the network without getting into trouble. So he basically stripped Van Damme of the TV title. And whilst all this was happening, Jerry Lynn was also out injured with, I think he'd broken his ankle. So Jerry Lynn came back about a month before Rob Van Damme, with a whole kind of new attitude, where he was pissed off because the fans had been cheering for Rob Van Dam all the way through his injury. He was mentioned constantly on the TV show and on pay-per-views, and everybody had forgotten about Jerry Lynn. Nobody cared about Jerry Lynn, so he got kind of like pissed off about that, which led to Cyrus trying to court Jerry Lynn into joining the network. Jerry totally refused. But then when Rob did come back, Jerry was even more pissed off, because he was getting like these massive ovations. He was Jerry was getting coming out to crickets almost, and the fans were cheering Rob Van Dam. So that caused this match happening, and it kind of led into what happened in later on in the match with the interruptions. They were network employees. Rhino worked for the network, so they all got involved. And then it leads on to the story after this match as well, where Jerry Lynn is still being courted by the network, whilst Rob Van Dam has a kind of like a battle against his friend that essentially cost him the match.
See, I was going to ask about that, the run-ins at the end. I watch a lot of these matches, I suppose, cold, I guess. If I don't remember the storyline, I'll go back and look some of them up, or remember bits and bobs, and I want to check that what I remember is correct. But with this, I thought, okay, Jerry Lynn, RVD, they've had a series of matches. It's just going to be a fantastic match. I went back and watched it. I didn't have any clue or wasn't aware of the stuff with the network. And when they all ran in at the end of the show, I was a little bit like, well, what's going on here? And I actually found that a bit of a shame, because I really enjoyed the match.
Yeah.
That kind of ruined it, I think.
Even knowing the story, I always felt that Jack Victory and Steve Corino coming in and attacking Rob on behalf of the network, and then the Rhino stuff where he spears Jerry Lynn. All that I thought was too much, if you understand what I mean, especially if you're going to have the heel turn of Scotty Anton, who was Rob Van Dam's best friend. I felt that if you just have had that heel turn, it would have been ample. But I suppose if you've got a storyline where the network are totally against Rob Van Dam and wanting to bring Jerry Lynn on board, it makes sense. But I think it was a little bit overbooked for me. And I can totally see your point of not knowing kind of the backstory. You'll be like, what the fuck are these getting involved for? Didn't need it. I do understand your point. And for me, I feel pretty much the same. Apart from the Scotty Anton, that bit made sense for me.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, having had the whole show on, ECW and this show in particular was just batshit crazy, wasn't it? There's so much going on all the time, run-ins here, and there was so much happening with other people running in on matches, other people turning up out the blue, multi-man matches. Virtually everybody's got managers or seconds or valets with them. There always seems to be a lot of people on screen all the time, which is fine to a degree. But when you have all of this at the end of this match as well, it wasn't just for this match. I felt the whole show then came across a little bit like that. There's just a little bit too much, if that makes sense.
Some overbooking, I understand what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, we've got some brilliant spots in there anyway. Rob Van Dam at one stage goes for a hip toss. Jerry Lynn counters it into a really nasty looking DDT. I thought that was fantastic. Mm-hmm. That looked really good. Bill Alfonso brings a chair into the ring later on in the match, and we get some stuff. If the chair's on the floor, and we have an amazing counter to a leg sweep, which Jerry Lynn turns into a leg drop, I guess, onto RVD. The chair.
That for me, I mean, this match is just full of essentially what this show's about, great chain wrestling. I don't think there's two wrestlers that I know of who could do it quite like Jerry and Rob Van Dam. I think they just work together beautifully, but that particular spot with the finish of the chain being the missed leg sweep and then dropping into that leg drop on the chair, I thought it was beautiful.
Absolutely, that's fantastic. Beautiful. That's exactly what I want from my wrestling. That's the sort of thing I want. Move for move, counter, counter, just absolutely brilliant stuff. Rob Van Dam goes for a monkey flip out of the corner onto the chair at one stage. Mm-hmm. Jerry Lynn counters that into a kind of sunset flip powerbomb effort and sends Van Dam halfway across the ring onto the chair. And that's just, I mean, I've just got a note here that says, why? That was incredible.
Yeah. It's just stunning. The things that these two guys could do with a chair as a prop is just phenomenal. I mean, the amount of missed Van Terminator spots in the match is just absolutely brilliant. There's a segment where I think Jerry Lynn is leaning over the fans' guardrail. Bill Alfonso is holding a chair up, and Rob Van Dam does a corkscrew spinning leg drop onto a chair, and it's just outstanding, outstanding,
just absolutely brilliant stuff. A table gets involved. The table's it's really set up at ringside because I think it's like an additional commentary team there or something. Mags maybe are sat at the table at ringside, and it just gets its contents cleared, and it's on the outside of the ring, and they tease a suplex into it at one stage, and then they tease something else, and then it ends up with Jerry Lynn bulldogging RVD through the table. And as simple as that is, just a straightforward bulldog, a running headlock bulldog, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
I can't say I remember it. And the best thing about it is Jerry comes off the worst, so he ends up with a long gash on his back from the table spot.
Alfonso interferes again, pushes Jerry Lynn onto the top rope, sort of crotching him on there, and that's when they did the whole holding the chair for the Van Daminator, wasn't it?
I would have done without is how many times people got crotched in this match. It happens about four or five times maybe, and I think it kind of loses its meaning by the end of it.
It's like anything, isn't it, when it gets overdone, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Young Bucks, we're looking at you. Carino And then we come to, I suppose, the end with Carino, Rhino and Cyrus all coming down. And again, I've got a note here saying no idea why, but you've cleared that up for me, which is great.
Steve Carino, I think he'd been in a match earlier on the card, and that's why he was like, had blood all over him. And
yeah, he was an absolute state, abandoned. Yeah. He was wrestling.
And his kind of lackey, Jack Victor, came out. They were attacking on behalf of the network. That leads to, I think Rob Van Dam actually, he helps him fight. Jerry helps fight them off for Rob Van Dam. So then we get back to where it's a one-on-one. And that means Rhino comes in, which just his goal was absolutely just deadly. It just looked vicious.
Every time he hit it, it looked amazing, didn't it?
It did. But that essentially leads to the end, where we start. We have the chair back in the match. I think RVD throws it at Jerry, but instead Jerry ducks. Which meant Bill Alfonso caught it. Jerry Lynn gives him a Van Daminator. Rob Van Dam then gives Jerry Lynn a Van Daminator, goes for the top rope frog splash, and then Scotty Anton does the dirty. He shoves Rob Van Dam off the top rope, and then we get the cradle pile driver, which Jerry Lynn was one of the people who really championed that move. Rob Van Dam kicks out after the first one, and then they put a chair in the middle of the ring, and they claim that the second cradle pile driver was on the chair, and it really wasn't. It was no. Well off. I think Jerry Lynn actually ended up sitting on the chair.
Yeah, he just smashes his arse down on it, doesn't he?
Yeah, but it gets him the win. I think that was his only win in ECW over Rob Van Dam in, I'd say, dozens of matches on the house circuit. I know he didn't win any kind of pay-per-view matches until then, and I don't think he won any afterwards. So, yeah, that was like a real feather in Jerry Lynn's cap and the end of his kind of like bitterness towards Rob, because he was not as accepted by the ECW faithful as Rob was.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was great. I mean, one thing very quickly before we get to our rating of the contest, when RVD is pushed off by Scotty Anton, his friend, when he turns on him, and they got like the, if anyone's not seen it at this ECW event, they've got the entrance ramp very similar to AEW now or WCW back in the day, where the ramp literally goes right up to the ring itself as opposed to dropping down. He kind of half lands on it and half goes off the side, and obviously, for Van Dam, it's not going to be a massive issue because the guy can do the splits and lift weights. It's crazy. But it looked awful, didn't it?
That was done purposefully as well. It was to kind of like, because Rob had come back from a broken leg, and earlier in the show, you see like a bit of a promo with Rob, Bill and Scotty, and you can see where he's taping up his foot. That move was done to kind of like show that it was going to do damage to that leg again.
Okay.
But it did look brutal. Like you said, it looked like he'd done the splits and landed on the ramp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I agree with you, Mags, that the turn at the end would have been enough. We didn't need all the other interference and so on. But that aside, there was enough here for me to really enjoy. At one point, there was the opening sequence that we talked about. I actually rewound it and called the wife in and showed her. I was that impressed with it. So ultimately, to me, it was great.
Whilst it's nowhere near their best match in ECW at all, this is a perfect example of why this was a pinnacle feud for ECW, that it meant so much to the company that you could arguably say it's their Rock versus Austin feud.
Yeah, I understand, yeah. So, usual rating out of 10, Mags, what are you thinking?
Okay, so like I just said, I don't think it's their best match, so for that I can't give it like near perfect score. I thought that the network running was too much overbooking. If you're going to end with the heel turn of Scotty Anton, the rest is just felt like fluff. It kind of like it moved that network story along. I understand that bit, but with these two being so good together, it took away from the point of the match for me. But I still enjoy it. I enjoy it every single time I watch it. I think these two are two of the most talented wrestlers to ever do it, and especially Jerry Lynn. I don't think he gets his fair shake of the stick, I suppose, in terms of plaudits.
Yeah, you're spot on.
But I would give this an 8. I think I'd go with an 8.
Okay. I'm probably going to go a touch lower. The interference, it was a big thing for me. If we had the one issue of the turn and then the finish, okay. But it was, there was just too much going on at the end for me. And it didn't need that, because there was enough in the match to make it brilliant. So we didn't need all of that. Usos versus The Shield, we both gave a 7. I enjoyed this more than that. Jeff Jarrett versus Shawn Michaels, we gave an 8, both of us. It's closer to that for me, but maybe not quite on a level. So I'm probably going to go 7.5, Mags.
Okay. I mean, understandable. Especially with not knowing the backstory, I suppose, and it can be quite jarring with the run-ins and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, I understand your point.
Yeah, okay, no worries. On that note, then, I suppose the next step is simply to decide where we go next. Do you want to go first or second, my friend?
I'll go first, as is tradition.
So, okey-doke.
I mentioned how I don't believe that Jerry Lynn got his fair shake of the stick with plaudits and with towels. And he certainly didn't get a long period of time in the biggest show in the world with WWF. When ECW did go bankrupt, he did come over. He spent a little bit of time in the WWF, I think about 10 months perhaps. And he actually won a title on his debut. He won the WWF light heavyweight title. I think it was on his debut, and I'm actually going to go back and check just to make sure I've got that right. I'm sure it was. Yeah, he made his TV debut on April the 29th, 2001, Sunday Night Heat, where he defeated Crash Holly for the light heavyweight title. So yeah, he won that title on his debut. That title was actually not long before it actually just disappeared.
Yeah.
I think the last champion was X-Pac, and he won it in SummerSlam 2001, I think. And after that, he was meant to drop it in Survivor Series, but he got injured. So I think just for the sake of Jerry Lynn not getting his just desserts, and the fact that his only WWF title was the light heavyweight title, I think we should watch a WWF light heavyweight title match. And what better than to go to SummerSlam 2001, where X-Pac became the final WWF light heavyweight champion when he faced Tajiri.
Oh, okay. Tajiri is the guy who busted Carino open on this pay-per-view.
Certainly was.
Yeah, I enjoyed that match as well. So Tajiri versus X-Pac, SummerSlam 2001, you say, yeah?
Correct, yes.
Okay, excellent stuff. I mean, those are two very talented fellas. I bet that'll be a great shout, mate. Another good potential match there for us to watch. It's better to be watching good wrestling than crap, innit, mate, eh?
Hey, well, it all depends on whether wrestling Twitter lets us watch good or crap. And then again, it depends on what your pick is.
Ah, okay. Well, first of all, before I get to my pick, there's something I want to address. Now, obviously, last week we had our finally got to the coverage of when Hogan saved the world.
You're not allowed to mention that anymore.
I'm making reference to last week's show, mate. That's all. Okay, I'm not allowed to mention WrestleMania 7 when Hogan saved the world. I fully appreciate that, but this is what I want to address. It came to my attention yesterday afternoon that for all these weeks we've been speaking about that and what Hogan did for us all, he didn't actually save the world that day, Mags. It didn't go away.
No, it didn't. And I know exactly where you're going with this.
Sergeant Slaughter didn't go away. The Iraqi war was over, but there was that one tiny little speck of evil still in the world. General Adnan and Sergeant Slaughter didn't go away after WrestleMania 7. They actually got a mate of theirs in. The Iron Sheik got involved. And they went to SummerSlam 1991, where on that occasion, we finally got rid of the evil Saddam Hussein sympathizers in Sergeant Slaughter. And he reverted back to being all-American, flag-waving, best buddies with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. But Hogan obviously can't face three guys on his own. Oh, no. Hogan needed to call up his mate, the Ultimate Warrior, for help. So, yeah, you've got Ultimate Warrior Hogan versus those three. It kind of feels a little bit like we didn't cover the end, you know, Hogan saving the world properly if that match happened. So I wonder if that's going to come up in the future, Mags. I don't know. We'll have to see how that goes. Anyway, my actual pick.
You absolute arse, Pat.
My actual pick is using a commentator to link. Joey Styles was obviously the voice of ECW. He commentated on this event, as he did, I think, pretty much every single ECW event ever, I believe. I don't think he missed any, did he? I'm not sure, but...
No, and for a lot of them, he was a solo commentator.
Yeah. He eventually ended up working for the WWE. And was like the main commentator on, I think he was the main commentator on Raw for a little while, may have been SmackDown, I'm not sure.
Yep.
Going into WrestleMania season, and he had this dream of commentating at WrestleMania. Eventually it got changed and moved around, and he was told he wouldn't be commentating at WrestleMania and was quite disappointed about this. But one match on the card was fought under hardcore rules, and he basically pitched himself to Vince McMahon, saying, "No one in your company has commentated on more hardcore matches than me. I should do that match." And he got his wish, and he got to commentate on the hardcore match at WrestleMania 22 between Edge and Mick Foley. So that's where I'd like to go next week, using Joey Styles' commentary, as the link. And I'd like to put forward Edge versus Foley, the hardcore match from WrestleMania 22, mate.
It's a great pick, and I enjoyed that whole Joey Styles story, because I think it was not long after WrestleMania he went on a kind of like part bomb of his own, where he was ripping into the WWE for him understanding why he couldn't commentate for WrestleMania, but he wasn't good enough for Backlash, and that really kind of got his goat. That's one of the best kind of like shoot work promos that I've seen from a commentator. It's so good. But yeah, it's a very good pick.
Okay, so there we go. Those are your options for next week. We have Tajiri versus X-Pac from SummerSlam 2001 for the WWF Light Heavyweight title. Or we have Edge versus Mick Foley in a hardcore match from WrestleMania 22. You can, as always, vote on the poll to decide where the chain takes us all next week. And that is on Twitter at @chain_wrestling. You can find us when this show comes out, when you've heard this show. The poll is normally up within an hour to a day, depending on when I sort of pull my finger up my backside and get it done. But those are your options. So, yeah, okay. Mags, do you want to let everyone know where they can find you online, please, my friend?
Absolutely. You can find me...
Fans stroke.
You can find me only on Twitter, at DAJ Kirby, where you'll see links to all the content I'm involved in and my OnlyFans account on there as well.
That's it. That's the one everyone's interested in, mate. you can follow me at @SJPWords, and you can follow the show and vote in all the polls at @chain_wrestling. That's on Twitter and Facebook, but for the poll, it is just solely on Twitter. So follow us there. If you don't have a Twitter, open one up and follow us, then you can vote. And then you can take part in everything that everyone else does, can't you? So
be one of the cool kids.
One of the cool kids. Again, thank you to everyone for interacting with the show. It wouldn't work without you. It's hugely appreciated. I'm off now to track down John Bon Jovi and give him a bit of a slap. Mags, I will speak to you next week, my friend.
If you survive John Bon Jovi, that is.
All right, ta-ra.
Bye-bye.